Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello, London, Johan. Welcome to Book Cheat, the book club podcast where I've read the book so you don't have to. My name is Dave Warnocky, and on each episode of this show, we look at one of the classics. And it's not just me looking at a classic live in London today. Would you please welcome to the stage my special guests this week? It's Matt Stewart and Phil Wang. Yeah! Hello!
Phil, you got a bigger cheer than me.
I just have a nice jacket. They just like my jacket. Hi, everybody.
Hi, everybody.
That's pretty strong.
Not bad.
That's pretty good.
I felt a bit sympathetic, but...
All the kindness is what matters. Lovely to be here. Thank you so much for having me.
Thanks so much for being here. We don't usually do these live shows in armchairs. How do you feel about this furniture?
Is this just for the British leg?
That we flew these over. It was very expensive.
Oh, they're lovely.
Yeah, I might probably nod off. This is too comfortable.
Honestly, I am worried about you nodding off in that chair.
What do you call these? Like a baby Chesterfield or something? No? All right. Just trying to sound like I knew something there.
Well, that was impressive. I think people were just impressed. I think that's
quietly impressed.
People going, oh, wow, Matt's more privileged than we thought. He knows about different types of leather chair. He's really done damage to his everyman persona.
Now, this is a podcast. It's about books, Phil.
Oh, fuck. Yeah. I did not know that.
Now, whenever I have a guest for the first time on the show, I usually ask them if they're much of a reader or if you've ever been much of a reader in your life. Because I started the show basically because when I was a kid, I read a lot, but then I really dropped off for a good couple of decades there. But I've come back in strong with a podcast about books that forces me to read now. So that's my tactic. But are you much of a reader?
Yeah, I hated it as a kid. I didn't really read as a child, which is weird because I was nerdy, but like not book nerdy. I was like video game nerdy.
Yeah.
I was like video game and professional wrestling nerd, which is the opposite of reading. WWE is the opposite of reading. Yeah. And then sort of like, I started reading in my teens Dan Brown novels. And I thought, yeah, some brown heads in. Yeah. Yeah. And I thought, this is literature. Yeah. And I read like all of them. Digital Fortress, that's actually the best. Yes. A fortress head in.
Yeah, you're getting nicher and nicher out there.
Yeah, I went like deep. I went like deep cuts. And then I went to university and I got, and then I read a few more other novels and I tried to catch up on my literature gap. And then and then Dan Brown wrote The Lost Symbol. Mm. And I was like, oh yeah, Dan's got a new book out. And I got it and I couldn't get through like 5 pages. It was atrocious. I was like, I enjoyed this. So that's been my journey. Yeah, and I now mainly read, do you know Twitter?
Oh, I've heard of that.
Some pretty wild stuff.
Yeah,
it's gotten better lately, hasn't it? Now that...
I actually think it's gotten better recently.
Yeah, now
I'm very problematic.
Yeah, now we're
like a good guy back in charge. Yeah,
that's right. We can say what we wanted to say. Follow us at Book Cheat Pod. Okay, fantastic. Some really hot takes about books in there.
Who's Dan Brown's that illusionist guy, right? Who makes
you. Yeah. Yeah, it's amazing. At the end of the book, you have his thoughts in your head.
Whoa.
Yeah. The whole story is in your head.
Whoa.
I don't know how he does it.
How does he do it?
I don't know.
Well, this week, we're going a bit further back than Dan Brown. We're going all the way back to The Invisible Man by H.G. Wells. Ooh. Thank you. Would you have done that no matter what I said? You would have.
I think they're doing an impression of the Invisible Man.
So people have suggested I do these, Phil, and this one's been suggested by Garrett Mitchell from Pennsylvania. He went tonight. No, we got Cara from Massachusetts. John O'Sullivan from Ireland. There's a chance. Was that a wow? A small dog was kicked up the back there. Sarah from Australia. Jeremy Webb from Melbourne.
Is that Webby's in?
We know him, so I don't think it is. And finally, from Mildura, Australia, Lord Lowen Josephs.
What the hell?
From Mildura?
From Australia?
Yeah.
A lord?
Lord Lowen.
Oh, wow.
Mildura is like a country town that grows oranges. They got a lord there?
Lord of the oranges, yeah, yeah. But what I have ascertained by reading that back with people from US, Ireland, Australia, no one from the UK wanted me to cover this, so sorry, but I've chosen it.
Is it an English book?
It very much is, yeah. It's a London book.
Oh, that's where we are.
We are, yes.
Any Londoners in?
Yeah.
Not many.
No.
Very international town, London.
Yeah, all right. Are you either of you familiar with the Invisible Man before we kick it off?
I'm not invisible myself. So I'm going to find it hard to relate to the story. But I just want to see myself represented in the book. That's all right.
As a modern man, I feel invisible, you know. What about us?
That's why Mr. Musk has taken over Twitter to make us visible. Like,
finally giving us a voice.
I wasn't really aware of it as a book. I was aware of it slightly as an old horror movie, The Invisible Man, because I guess it got turned into a horror movie. But I always found it strange that it was a horror movie. It didn't seem that scary to me. And then I realized, I was imagining the film The Invisible Man from the perspective of the Invisible Man. And I think because I'm deep down just such a perv, I was like, that doesn't sound like a horror movie. That just sounds like the best day of your life. And then I realized, oh, it's from the perspective of, right, yeah.
For the people being perved on.
Being perved on, yeah. Yeah, yeah. Yeah, but I'm interested to see where it comes from. Because H.G. Wells, he's like all the War of the Worlds in that, isn't it?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
In it. Oh, that's great. Is that a London? That's London, isn't it?
Yeah, I just want.
Sorry, that's London, isn't it?
I'm trying to make it like believable that you guys are in London right now.
Yeah.
For any listeners.
Too right, geezer.
Too right.
Is that London?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's heaps London. Heaps London, yeah.
I saw a movie last year called The League of Extraordinary Gentlemen, and there wasn't the Invisible Man in it, but there was an Invisible Man in it, because they couldn't get the copyright, apparently.
So the only copyrighted part of The Invisible Man is the definite article?
Yes.
That's a terrible lawyer that got on that deal.
So in the story, I think the actual Invisible Man, whatever his name is, he's dead, and this new guy found his serum. And now he's just an invisible man. It's a great movie. I think it's... People don't like it, but I thought it was fine.
Is that the one with Sean... That's the one with Sean Connery in it,
yeah,
right?
I think it's his last ever film.
Is it?
That is... That cannot be true. So he didn't make a movie for, like, the last 20 years of his life?
Yeah, he retired.
Is it true?
Yeah. No.
I think it was so bad that he quit cinema.
And you liked it.
I thought, well, I went into it hearing that it sucked, and I'm like, oh, this doesn't suck that much, which is good enough for me.
There you go. All right, The Invisible Man. It's a science fiction novel by H.G. Wells, originally serialized in magazine form in 1897. H.G. Wells or Herbert George Wells?
1897, that's the year the VFL football...
Sorry, Phil. Matt likes to interrupt
commenced.
with boring facts a lot.
Right.
Oh, mostly about...
Were you bored by that fact, Phil?
More confused. I didn't know what it meant. What does it mean, the VFL?
Yeah, it's what the Australian Football League...
I thought it was AFL. Oh, VFL is the football.
Yeah, no, it's...
Aussie.
VFL became the AFL in 1990, but it began in 1897 as the VFL, Victorian Football League.
Oh.
Yeah, see, it's not boring. Yeah. It's interesting.
Yeah, no, that's quite interesting.
Yeah,
now.
It's best just to not ask questions. Herbert George Wells was born in Bromley in Greater London in 1866, and he died in 1946 at his home, which overlooked Regent's Park, which is right there.
Oh, that's nice.
Impressive. He wrote more than 50 novels, which is a lot, and dozens. 50 novels.
Ooh, too many.
Yeah.
I think after 40, they're not good anymore.
Yeah, they can't be all good, can they?
And also, like in Australia, if you said, oh, this famous thing happened near here, everyone would be like, fucking hell, really? In London, they're like, yeah.
Yeah, of course.
Something important happened every fucking 5 metres.
Yeah.
Doesn't matter. No one cares.
Yeah, you can't lift your foot up without seeing one of those blue plaques that says, like, I don't know, Chris had a shit here in 1891. I'm like, oh, great, who's Chris? You're obsessed with those plaques. I love those plaques. So 50 novels, dozens of short stories, including, as you said, The War of the Worlds, The Island of Dr. Moreau, The Time Machine, which I've done on the pod before, and The Invisible Man, which has led him to be dubbed the father of science fiction. And one thing I didn't know is he was a diabetic and co-founded the charity The Diabetic Association, known today as Diabetes UK. There you go. What a guy. As for The Invisible Man, the work has been the basis for many adaptations across mediums, and the main character whom we shall soon meet has been commonly referenced in popular culture as an invisible man. And we always start with the opening line to paint the scene with a bit of Herbert George Wells' writing here. Chapter one is called...
Who's Herbert George Wells?
Sorry, you might know him as H.G. Wells.
H.G., yes. Love H.G.
That's another niche Australian thing. All right. Chapter one, The Strange Man's Arrival.
Strange or estranged?
No, just strange.
Strange. Okay. Yeah,
right. He's an estranged man.
Yeah, it's an estranged man. Yeah.
She left me. This is the opening line, the opening few lines here. The stranger came early in February, one wintry day, through a biting wind and a driving snow, the last snowfall of the year, over the down, walking from Bramblehurst Railway Station and carrying a little black portmanteau in his thickly gloved hand. He was wrapped up from head to foot, and the brim of his soft felt hat hid every inch of his face, but the shiny tip of his nose. The snow had piled itself against his shoulders and chest and added a white crest to the burden that he carried.
Wow.
He was off. Padding for words early, wasn't he?
This is good. Yeah, this is good stuff on Herbert.
In?
Yeah.
You're in?
Good on Herbie. I really want to know what happens to this shiny nose.
Oh, I'm going to talk about this nose. Oh,
great.
It's one of the main characters. Am I rough? We've just met as our unyet unnamed main character there, referenced by the narrator as the stranger. He's just arrived during a snowstorm at the Coach and Horses, which is an inn/bar in Iping.
Iping?
You're shitting me. I literally downloaded an audiobook read by an English person just to hear that word, and he said Iping.
How are you spelling Iping?
I-P-I-N-G? Is that Iping?
I've never heard of that place.
Maybe it's made up.
When you spelt it, the crowd murmured.
Yeah, it was a murmuring.
Little conversations broke out everywhere. Yeah. That was amazing.
When people thought you meant Epping, I mean, there was fury in the room. You could feel it.
I felt
you could
that.
Feel the anger in the room when people thought it was Epping. But then when you said I-P-I-N-G, everyone went, all right, we've misjudged Dave here. We've been
Thank
too
you.
Harsh.
Thank you. Yeah. That cost me an audible credit, so... We're told that he staggers in more dead than alive and yells, a fire in the name of humanity and charity, a room and a fire. Good stuff.
That's in the name of what? And humanity?
Humanity and charity.
That's a nice way to enter a hotel, isn't it? When I enter Premier Inn, in the name of humanity, I want something on the top floor, please. In the name of all that is right and holy. Sir, please, we've told you you can't come to this Premier Inn anymore.
Sounds like you've just seen the Hindenburg go down. Yeah. The humanity, a fire. Hey. Yeah, here you go. So yeah, he was. I thought he was saying there was a fire, but he just wanted a heater, basically.
He's cold.
Yep.
Yep.
Because, right. This is the guy with the nose?
This is the nose man, yeah. We have had one character so far, yeah. But here's another one.
Hard to keep up. Yeah.
Here's another one.
HG weaves a wild web.
Yeah. But who is he talking about? Here's Mrs. Hall, the owner, who gives the man a room, despite the fact he looks quite strange, being covered from head to toe with only a shiny nose showing. He's wearing a hat and large spectacles with side glasses that make him look like he's basically wearing goggles. But she welcomes him in because he doesn't haggle about price. He just wants a room and she wants his cash. When she offers to take his coat off, though, he refuses and instead stands dripping, melting snow all over the fireplace, which she worries might cause rust. Watch okay. out for that.
So the stakes start pretty low in this book.
Yeah, yeah.
It starts as rust.
And that's yeah. She's like, oh, no, this is going to cause a bit of rust. She is shocked when he does remove his hat because she sees that, quote, all his forehead above his blue glasses was covered by a white bandage and another covered his ears, leaving not a scrap of his face exposed, excepting only his pink peaked nose.
Wow.
So he's wrapped up in bandages, this man, but he's got a nose sticking out. And when he eats, he covers his mouth with a napkin, which I think is just polite, but she thinks it's weird.
I think I'm going to say he eats through the nose. He just, like, just snorts everything.
Yeah.
Do you have anything for dinner, and is it in powder form? Yeah.
It's big in London, isn't it, that diet?
Yeah. People, and especially in bathrooms. People always have dinner in bathrooms. Yeah. In London. I don't know why that is.
She assumes that this man's been in an accident and tries to sort of ask him about it, but he totally shuts her down and clearly doesn't want to chat. To be honest, he's a bit rude, bit rude. The only thing he really communicates to Mrs. Hall is that he's desperate to have his bags delivered from a nearby train station. He tells her, I should explain what I was really too cold and fatigued to do before, that I am an experimental investigator.
Oh.
And I'd hear that and have a lot of follow-up questions. But Mrs. Hall says, indeed, sir. And she is, quote, much impressed. In fact, when other people in the town ask Mrs. Hall about her guest or what he does for a living, she says, oh, yeah, he's an experimental investigator. And this is a quote from the book. When asked what an experimental investigator was, she would say with a touch of superiority that most educated people knew such things as that and would thus explain that he discovered things. So she's got no idea what he does, but she's like, yeah, I know. Why don't you tell me what you think he does?
Yeah. That's like when someone asks me what Bitcoin is. I'm yeah. like, if you were clever, you'd already know.
Yeah.
So I'm not going to debase myself by explaining this to you.
Can you explain it to me?
Oh, it's about like a blockchain and you buy a picture of a chimp and then, and then you become very rich or very poor.
Oh, yeah, yeah. There's no middle ground anymore, sir. The stranger tells Mrs. Hall that he came to town to be alone to carry out more of his work. But Mrs. Hall doesn't really take a hint well, and she calls in a guy called Teddy Hemphrey, who has a job I've never heard of before, but maybe in England this is a big job. It sounds pretty English.
Rat catcher.
any guesses, Phil, what he might do, an English-sounding job that's caught my fancy?
Is it a chimney lad or a carriage twat or something like that.
Honestly, you are in the right ballpark. Teddy Hemphrey is a clock jobber.
Great.
Which I've never heard of.
I love a good clock job.
Yeah, clock job, yeah. Do you have your own personal clock jobber? She calls around the clock jobber who apparently repairs and maintains clocks. And she sends in this clock jobber into the stranger's room to have a look at his clock, but really she wants him to go in there and ask him, to get him talking about what he's you know, there for. But he totally shuts the clock jobber down as well.
Wait, so the matron of the hotel has sent in a clock jobber into the bandaged man, the stranger's room.
Yep.
In the hopes that sort of he'll get the down low on why.
Yeah,
this
she's
there.
Like, you've got the gift of the gab. You'll get him talking. You're a clock jobber, and he can't job his clock. He basically gets kicked out of the room.
It feels like they're building up the suspense so that we don't know what's going on. But the name of the book's The Invisible Man.
Yeah. That is only part of the second half of the story, Matt. The first half is a completely unrelated story. The first half is called The Bandaged Man. It's very different, very different. So the bandage, or Invisible Man's, bag soon arrives and it contains all sorts of peculiar things for science experiments, including bottles of powders, London, different coloured liquids of all sizes, and some are even labelled poison.
Right.
So the landlady's like, this is a bit weird. And for many months, he locks himself away in his room to carry out experiments. He doesn't go to church or communicate with anyone in the outside world. Sometimes Mrs. Hall hears bottles smashing, and when she expresses concern, he says, just add it to my bill if there's any damage. Just leave me alone. Don't worry about it.
Right.
She's a bit worried. She walks in to give him dinner one day without knocking, and he looks at her, and when she thinks... he looks at her and she thinks he seems to have very shallow eye sockets, which is a weird thing to notice about someone.
Well, she thinks he has shallow eyes.
Yeah, she walks in and goes, oh, I've got your soup. Oh, you've got shallow eye sockets.
Yeah. I wonder if that satisfied her curiosity. Yeah. A little nugget.
Yeah, just a little, oh. And then he immediately puts his glasses back on and she goes, I must have been seeing things. There's no way he's got shallow eye sockets. That would be weird.
This lady is a bit nosy. I mean, I know he's a bit weird and creepy, but it feels a bit unprofessional how much he's trying to invade her guest's private space.
Yeah, totally.
In her defense, he's also a bit nosy, because that's that's really all there is of him, isn't it?
Yes.
And that's the kind of thing you like, is it?
That felt right. So the whole town start to gossip about the still unnamed stranger. He certainly is a bit of a strange guy. I mean, he's not even going to church. Alarm bells. There's all these theories about him being a criminal, laying low, or all sorts of stuff. The local town doctor, Dr. Cuss.
Ooh.
Dr. Cuss, yeah. Don't get him on a bad day.
He insults you the second you walk in. Yeah. Look at your stupid leg. Yeah.
That's fucking tonsillitis. But he's also very nosy. He's curious and goes to meet the stranger for himself. And we don't hear what is said, but we do know Dr. Cuss runs out of the room in terror. Apparently, while speaking with the stranger, his hand had revealed that his sleeve was open but completely empty. So he was gesticulating with an open sleeve.
Where is this going?
Yeah.
Who is this stranger?
I know. There's so many questions. Dr. Cuss could see all the way down the open sleeve, but there was nothing in it, but it was open. And when Dr. Cuss expressed concern about the stranger having an empty sleeve before his very eyes, the stranger said, empty? It's an empty sleeve, is it? You say it's an empty sleeve? Which sounds like he's padding for something. He then lifted the sleeve up and moved it close to the doctor's face, and what felt like a finger, he couldn't see it, tapped him on his nose. So he basically just boops the doctor on his snoot. And then the doctor ran away terrified. And that's not the only weird thing that happens in town, guys. Soon the local vicar and his wife awake to the sounds of their vicarage being burgled in the middle of the night. But the weirdest thing is, when they go downstairs, there's no one in the room. What is going on here?
Just a floating nose.
Later that morning, Mrs. Hall decides to kick out the stranger, partly because he's weird, but mostly because he hasn't paid his bill for ages. So she invites the blacksmith over to change the locks when she sees him out of the room one day, which is pretty drastic. Step, but the weirdest thing is the stranger walks out of the room as they start to change the lock. The same room that moments earlier was empty.
I'm trying to get my head around
this. I know. What is happening? What on earth is going on? You're never going to believe this sweet reveal that's coming up. The stranger then offers Mrs. Hall money, which she's suspicious about because earlier he didn't seem to have any at all. Where did he get the money from? Is he the thief? But the room was empty. It all builds to a head on Whit Monday, a Christian holiday. And to set the scene, we have what I believe is the most English paragraph I've ever come across. And being English, I was wondering, Phil, if you could possibly bring this scene to life for
us. Okay,
I'll
try.
Before we get into it, is Whit Monday still celebrated?
Oh yeah, it's a big deal. Yeah. Everyone gets fucking wankered on Whit Monday.
On a Whit Monday.
Yeah. Oh, it's crazy, man.
So this is, I should have checked before you can read. I should have forgot to check.
Pretty bold assumption, but I'll try. Okay, so this is the most English paragraph.
Yeah, but Steve, you think it's, to me it seemed very, very English. This set the scene for Whit Monday for the next part of the story.
It was the finest of all possible Whit Mondays. And down the village street stood a row of nearly a dozen booths, a shooting gallery, and on the grass by the forge were three yellow and chocolate wagons and some picturesque strangers of both sexes putting up a coconut shy. I'll give you guys.
Oh, then there's one bit more.
There's one bit more, yeah. Okay. The gentlemen wore blue jerseys, the ladies white aprons, and quite fashionable hat with heavy plumes. Wodger of... What's the name? Wodger. Wodger of the Purple Fawn. Purple Fawn is in quotation marks here. Wodger of the Purple Fawn and Mr. Jaggers. What? How old is... How old is Mick Jaggers? Wodger of the Purple Fawn and Mr. Jaggers, the cobbler, who also sold old second-hand ordinary bicycles, was stretching a string of Union Jacks and Royal Ensigns, which had originally celebrated the first Victorian Jubilee across the road. Yeah, that's pretty English.
Yeah.
So I think for some reason, second-hand ordinary bicycles is the most English thing there.
Thank you. Phil Wang, the most English guy I've ever. I needed to hear that.
Yeah.
I think cobbler is also... that's got to be maybe the most English job. What does it mean?
Cobbler's shoes, isn't it?
Right, yeah. It's about...
I had a lovely cobbler put these together.
Oh, wow.
His name's Nigel, so he just puts a big N on there.
So now we've set the scene. It's Whit Monday, and on this day, many of the town are in the horse and stables where the stranger's been staying, including the incredibly named local village constable, Mr. Bobby Jaffers. And led by Mr. Bobby Jaffers, they confront the stranger...
Wait, it's a constable named Bobby?
Yeah.
Come on. Yeah. That's a bit on the nose. Yeah. Oh, I mean, it is. That's all on the nose. This is such a nosy book.
Yeah.
not as much, fair enough. That's fair.
So, led by Bobby Jaffers, the local constable, they confront the stranger over the robbery of the vicary. Cornered and frustrated, the stranger says, quote, "You don't understand who I am or what I am. I'll show you. By heaven, I'll show you." Then he put his open palm over his face and withdrew it. The center of his face became a black cavity.
Ooh.
That's right. He's an invisible man. You called him out. The title of the book wasn't just a coincidence.
Ah, double bluff. They got me.
They got you.
Wait, is that what a double bluff is?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, sure. Everyone freaks out and Bobby Jaffers, the constable, goes to arrest the stranger over the robbery. In fact, most of the bar begin to descend on him. He says, okay, I'll...
What is the charge?
What is the charge? Being invisible? A succulent invisible man? Do you know the succulent Chinese meal man?
Oh, yes, of course, yeah.
Yes.
I get it now.
Yeah, great. I'm so glad you know it, because otherwise it's so baffling.
So it's so funny. It's... Like, Chinese food is great, but succulent just does not apply to any Chinese food. None of it is succulent. It's all good.
But in Australia it is.
Yeah.
It is succulent.
Yeah, our stuff is truly succulent. He says, okay, I'll give up. But then he just starts stripping off his clothes. Get naked. Always a good tactic to stop a fight. Get naked.
That is a classic move. You see that a lot outside a pub late at night. If there's a fight, one guy will always take his shirt off.
Yeah.
You don't have that here?
Only on Whit Mondays.
I never know what the logic is there. It's, have you seen that happen?
Yeah. It's like, come on, then. I think, I don't know what it is. I think it's just to show that you're physically active or that you're doing... You have to do something with your hands.
Yes.
That's always a problem when you perform. You don't know what to do with your hands, right? So it must be the same when you start to fight someone. It's like, where do I put these? You can't put them in your pockets. That doesn't look very aggressive, so you have to... And it's never like, they're never ripped. Like, it makes sense if they look
yes.
like Groundskeeper Willy underneath.
You're right.
Yes.
And they're ripped. But they're not. They're always just flabby against the soil. I'm now less scared of this fight.
Yeah. Before you had a shirt and I was wondering, what's under there?
Yeah.
Now I've seen it, you're like, oh, that's a bit shit. Yeah. I could take this guy.
Maybe they're, you know, maybe strategically less to grab onto, you know?
Maybe that's it.
Yeah, if it comes to a wrestle.
Sense. That makes more sense.
Yeah, you don't want to damage your shirt, you know?
Oh, yeah.
Not this thing. Look at it. Beautiful.
I get completely naked when I fight. Yeah. They're not grabbing onto anything. Well, I mean, they could, I guess, but... Actually, no, maybe that's not such a good idea.
So he gets naked. He takes his clothes off, and of course he disappears because he is an invisible man, and the town lose their grip on him, and then the invisible man...
He took his shirt off. No, you did say that, yeah.
Then the invisible man starts hitting them. He starts taking them out one by one and they can't see him. And Bobby Jaffers falls down and even hits his head.
No, Bobby Jaffers.
And just like that, though, the invisible man is gone. He escapes into the night. But the story isn't over yet. Imagine if it was. That's it. He comes across a man that is described in the book as a tramp. His name is Mr. Thomas Marvel, wearing shabby clothes and a hat, sitting in a ditch outside of Iping. I'll edit later. He sits there considering whether to swap the shoes he's wearing for the larger but more waterproof ones he's just found in the ditch on the side of the road. He's like, okay, these fit better, but those are waterproof.
I'm confused. The invisible man is now in a bush.
No, this is a different guy. We've met a new character.
Okay,
And you're never going to believe it. He's going to cross paths with the invisible man.
Yeah. And he runs a tram.
No, he is a tramp.
Oh, he's a tramp. Okay. I thought he was driving a tram. Yeah. And he just went, fuck this, and he walked off into a bush to find new shoes. Okay.
So there's a completely new guy sitting in a ditch, just having a conversation with himself about shoes.
Okay.
He's pondering this out loud when a voice from an invisible location, you never know, believe who this is, starts talking back to him. It's the invisible man, but Thomas Marvel is freaking out. Is he drunk? Is he having visions? Where is this voice coming
from? Well, he's sort of having the opposite of that, isn't he?
Am I having soundings? What's going on here? Where's the voice coming from? And to bring this scene to life, I was wondering if I could lean on Mr. Matt Stewart, famed for his English accent work. If you wouldn't mind.
Too right, Cobber.
Absolutely. This is the character of Thomas Marvel. You'll be reading the parts in quotation marks, and I'll be reading the sort of descriptions in between here.
Okay, so I'm a tramp.
So you're in a ditch on the side of the road, and you've just started hearing a voice, and you're wondering, what the heck is going on? So this is Mr. Thomas Marvel's reaction to a voice talking to him.
What kind of English accent? Just whatever?
Yeah, just feel it, I reckon. Okay. Yeah.
Go for, like, Birmingham. Do you know, how's your Iping accent?
I could do Dudley. I'm from Dudley.
Yeah.
But I can only say Dudley.
Dudley.
All right. Yeah. Just try and get into it.
Yeah, it's great to watch an actor prepare.
I'm off my blooming chump. It's no good, it's fret about them blasted boots. I'm off my blessed blooming chump. Oh, it's spirits.
Fantastic. That, absolutely, I'm feeling the character so much more. You bring it to life. But to prove that he's real, the invisible man starts throwing rocks at Mr. Marvel. It's the only way. And this is how Mr. Marvel takes that.
It's a fair do. I don't understand it. Stones flinging themselves. Stones talking. Put yourself down. Rot away. I'm done.
Finally, the invisible man convinces Mr. Marvel, and needless to say, Mr. Marvel is impressed.
I'm dashed.
if this don't beat cock fighting, most remarkable. And there I can see a rabbit clean through you, half a mile away. Not a bit of you visible, except you haven't been eating bread and cheese.
Wait, what? What do I say? You haven't been eating bran cheese.
Bran and cheese. Bread and cheese.
Branches.
Bread and cheese.
Bread and cheese.
Bread and cheese.
Bread and cheese. Okay.
Thank you. Fantastic work.
No,
I'm
so that mad. Wasn't... Because if that was a good English accent, you probably would have been able to understand it. So I really believed in myself until right at the end there.
Yeah.
No, it was fantastic. It's fantastic. Brendan, if anything, Brendan Choice was... I was getting back into Australian here, so I'm going back to your original accent, Brendan Choice.
Brendan Choice. Brendan Choice. No, how would you say it?
Bread and cheese.
Bread and cheese.
Beautiful. So what he's saying there is he can see straight through the invisible man, except he notices that he's been eating bread and cheese. So he can see whenever he eats, the food just sort of sits there, sort of floating, digested.
If he can see it that clearly, he mustn't chew enough.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, keep chewing.
At one point, because, I mean, I presume he has the same digestion system we all do, at what point does the food become invisible and part of...
Yeah.
No, I'm not trying to be funny. It is like a philosophical question for me. At what point does the food become the body? What point does it... Is it like as it gets absorbed? Do you get to watch it like get slowly brown and then the bits that... can you see his shit?
Yeah. Because that bit's not absorbed. That's the bit the body doesn't want. So it's just sort of sitting there.
Oh,
and
gross.
You can tell he hasn't had a shit today. It's weird. It's gross, isn't it?
It is gross. No, this is a horror story.
That's horrifying.
You'd see the bladder as well, I suppose. There'd just be a pouch of urine sort of floating. Oh, the room's invisible. There's nothing in the room apart from a hovering bladder.
Yeah. What's that bag of piss doing over there? What's that doing? So there's a few questions in there.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
But the Invisible Man enlists Marvel... Mr. Marvel, to help him, promising to reward him, but also kind of threatening him and saying that he has to help him. Doesn't really give Mr. Marvel an option. The pair return to Iping, where Marvel breaks into the Invisible Man's old room and steals his notebooks. The locals have taken a peek in the notebooks, but it's all written in symbols and code, and they don't understand. So they can't just look at his experiments because it's all written in this code. Marvel turns up and the vicar and doctor let him into the room where the notebooks are, and in the process they also unknowingly let in the Invisible Man. That's why he got Mr. Marvel to go there. The doctor and the vicar ask Marvel to leave, and he does, but then the Invisible Man starts beating them up and takes his stuff back.
But Mr. Marvel goes on to write a very successful series of comics about about these incredible characters.
Inspiration right here. The town then blame Marvel and start chasing him, accusing him of being the Invisible Man, despite the fact they can clearly see him. There he is, the Invisible Man!
You said the town start chasing him.
Yeah.
Far out.
Towns used to be so much better at, like, agreeing on actions.
Yes.
Yeah.
Coming together.
Yeah, they come together, like, we're all going to beat this guy up. We're all going to chase him out of town. Where's our sense of community gone?
Yeah. When was the last time you chased someone out of town?
Together.
Yeah.
With your neighbours. Let's bring that Britain back. I haven't chased a hobo out of town in years.
So people start chasing the thief, and then an invisible presence, a man, if you will, starts taking them out one by one. He also breaks every window at the inn and cuts the town's telegraph cable. He's a real menace, this guy. Eventually, Marvel and the Invisible Man leave town completely. But a bit of tension develops between the Invisible Man and his new helper, Marvel, because Marvel's like, can I quit? I don't want to do this anymore.
I keep getting punched and run out of town.
Yeah.
This is no way to make a living.
But yeah, he was used to working by himself as well, you know. Hard to all of a sudden have a boss.
Yeah.
He was freelance until a couple of days ago.
Especially a boss who can be looking over your shoulder at any time.
Yeah. You're like, nightmare.
Yeah.
It's like coming out of COVID, you start to be allowed to work at home. All of a sudden, they want you back at the office. It's just like that.
And when was the last time you worked in an office, Matt?
It's been a little while.
Trying to do some relatable stuff there.
You know, like you. You plebs in the audience.
So Marvel's like, let me quit, I hate this. But Mr. Invisible won't let him quit because he needs someone to carry all his stuff, like the notebooks and the experiments, because if he were to carry them himself, people would see the notebooks just floating down the street. So he needs a regular person to carry his stuff.
Right, but what if he ate them?
Then they just sort of hover here until they turn into shit, remember?
So that's a bad idea.
But Marvel's not keen on the idea, and even when Marvel's like, quote, I'm really bad, honestly, you can do better, the Invisible Man won't let him leave. So he twists Marvel's arm behind his back and even threatens to kill him if he breaks the Invisible Man's trust. He really begins to show his angry and violent side over these chapters. Marvel manages to briefly escape, however, and runs into a pub called the Jolly Cricketer.
Oh, that's nice.
It's nice, isn't it? Screaming that there's an Invisible Man after him and they've got to let him in and lock the door. By now, the news of the Invisible Man has hit the paper, so this isn't received with the suspicion that you'd think it would. They're like, all right. They let him in, but they also let in the Invisible Man.
Ah, that's the thing about the Invisible Man.
I know, he's there, right, hot on his heels. And he's like, Marvel, you betrayed my trust. So a brawl breaks out after the Invisible Man attacks Marvel, and one of the guys at the pub actually pulls out a gun and fires it where he thinks the Invisible Man is.
That's such a bad idea. Such a clearly bad idea.
And he goes, I'm sure I hit him. I'm sure I hit him.
And everyone's got a gun problem.
Yeah.
I don't feel safe out there. I went to the Jolly Cricketer. Oh, I wanted to, but I'd be afraid of getting shot. Honestly, not good enough.
Well, they fire the gun and the guy's like, I swear I got him. They start feeling around for the dead body. Well, they can't feel him anywhere.
Yeah, so blood would be invisible as well if he didn't get shot. Oh, why?
Which we'll find out now. So, the story
inside
then...
Inside the veins, it's invisible.
Yeah, but outside.
Outside the veins, it's visible.
Mm.
Maybe it's the same with piss and shit.
Yeah.
Maybe inside the veins, it's invisible.
Well, blood isn't red unless it oxidizes. So maybe it's the oxygen, because the oxygen is far out of the body. That's the visible thing.
Right.
So when the blood contacts the oxygen, then you get to see it.
That makes sense. It's good to have a scientist on stage with us. Yeah.
But the shit we would see, though. You would see the shit hanging around, yeah. The floating bits of corn.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. This is just floating there.
Sorry.
The story then cuts to the house of a man called Dr. Kemp. It's a new character here, Dr. Kemp, a wealthy old doctor who hears some shots ring out at the nearby pub, the Jolly Cricketers. Just moments earlier, he'd been reading the newspaper that included accounts of an invisible man, and he laughed at how stupid people are for believing this sort of stuff. Invisible man, as if that could be true. Then there's a ring at the door. But his servant reports that when she opened it, no one was there. Or were they?
Nick knockers.
Yeah.
Do you have Nick knocking here?
What? No, do we? I mean, we have Whit Monday, but I've never heard of Nick knockers.
What? Yeah.
Is that like as a prank, people knocking on the
door? Yeah. What do you call that?
What? Knock down ginger. Okay, that's the most English thing you've
ever heard. Oh, knock down ginger.
I'm learning so much. Knock down ginger, wow. I wonder what the etymology of that is. Knock a door wrong. Yeah. Knock a door and run. I think that's a very literal description of the...
Okay. Right, you're just describing what you're doing there, okay. I get it. So no one's there, or weren't they? He goes to the door, no one there. Because walking back into his room, Dr. Kemp notices some blood on the floor that he swears wasn't there before.
Suspicious.
Yeah, there's also some blood on the doorknob. He's like, oh, I didn't think that was there before. When he gets back into his bedroom, he sees some floating bloody bandages. And he's like, I could have sworn it when I left those bandages, they weren't just floating in the air. Something's happening here. He hears a voice that tells him not to panic. It's the invisible man who addresses Dr. Kemp by his name. That's because he actually knows Kemp. He's accidentally stumbled into the doctor's house looking for medical supplies and realised, hey, I actually know that guy. It's Dr. Kemp. He tells the doctor that his name is Griffin. It's the invisible man, the stranger. His name is Griffin. And they went to school together. The doctor can't place him. He's like, Griffin? So Griffin says, I was a couple of years below you. He's like, no. He starts describing himself. He's like, I won a medal for chemistry at University College. And I think the doctor pretends to remember him, basically.
Yeah, at that point, there's a lot of pressure on him to remember this guy. You know, there's a lot at stake.
Yeah.
There's an invisible murderous man.
Like, oh, yeah.
I was at school. Yeah, I was a big fan of you.
Yeah, I wasn't invisible back then. Griffin says that he needs the doctor's help because people are after him and that his partner stole his money. That's a lie, but he's like, you know, he's trying to win over Dr. Kemp. Kemp agrees to give him a room for the night and gives him his word that he won't tell anyone about the stranger's presence. But Griffin says, with Kemp's help, we can work together to further my research, he says. Basically, he asks him to partner with him. With his science. Griffin goes for a sleep in Kemp's bedroom and locks the door, which is pretty rude, kicking a man out of his bedroom. He's exhausted, but thankfully the bullet just grazed his wrist, so he's not dying. But that's where the blood is from. And apparently when the blood drips out, he explains it coagulates, and that's why you can see the blood.
Hey? Coagulates?
Yeah.
So it just gets, like, sticky?
Yeah, sort of pulls and then slowly turns into just normal blood.
Okay. Yeah, I think he's kind of glazing over.
There is a bit of that. Whilst Griffin sleeps in his room, Kemp reads the newspaper articles again about an invisible man terrorising people and decides to write a letter to a guy called Colonel Adai. We don't know what he says in the letter, but we might come to that later. So Kemp has written a letter.
Okay.
The next day, Griffin explains to Kemp how he became invisible. This is how it all... Griffin was a medical student at the same time as Dr. Kemp, but he switched to physics because he was interested in light and became obsessed with finding out a way to make objects invisible. He left London 6 years ago and became a teacher and a student, but more importantly, he continued his research into making stuff invisible. He got close to working out a way, but he was worried someone would steal his idea. He thought that his professor at the university where he worked would try and claim co-credit. And he's like, I'm not giving that guy co-credit. So he went off on his own. He spent 3 years researching and he needed money to continue this research, so he stole from his father. But this is tragic. It turns out the money didn't belong to his father, so his dad shot himself. It was awful. Then there is no explanation about where the money came from or anything further than that.
That's not on Griffin. No, that's not on Griffin. He wasn't to know.
He didn't know, yeah.
He didn't know.
But he does say to Dr. Kemp, I don't feel bad about it.
He does say that. Yeah. Like, he doesn't have to be a dick about it. Yeah. Does he?
So he's not a great person. He's not a great person. After that, he moved into a cheap boarding house in London where he continued his experiments. The boarding house was said to be in a slum near Great Portland Street, which is where we are today.
That's amazing.
That's right. We're in the slum right now.
There used to be slums here.
Yeah.
It's also shiny.
Yeah. What amazing that we are here. Where that was. So he came up with this theory, I can make stuff invisible. He first tested it on a piece of wool, which is not that exciting. And then he's like, great, I made that disappear. How about I make this cat disappear? His neighbor's cat wandered into his house. And he's like, all right. Which he made it completely invisible except for the eyes, which just sort of floated along. Which is a little bit weird.
Has he described how he's administering the invisible? Is it a cream? Or is it like...
It's a topical solution.
I think it's a liquidy type thing.
Back to the affected area. So it's like, is it a paste or something? Has he said, or is it like a pill?
No, I think he applies it to the area.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, and then slowly, bit by bit, becomes invisible, except for the eyes.
Yeah, balming the eyes would be horrible.
Yeah, that'd be unpleasant. Wait, so the invisible man's eye is invisible?
Yes, yes, they are invisible. He got
so
better.
So he's done his eyes.
Yeah, he got better at it somehow, yeah.
Okay. But I guess maybe it's like putting in a contact. At first you're like, but after a couple of goes, it's fine.
Didn't before they say that he had shallow eye sockets? What does that mean?
I think that there was nothing behind there. She was looking into it.
Wouldn't that be deep eye sockets?
Well, shallow eye sockets just means sort of your eyeball is very flush with your face.
Right.
Right, and a deep eye socket is recessed into your skull more.
Right.
So maybe, is this answering your question?
Yes.
So I guess it's easier. I guess it's easier. Maybe it's because it's easier if you have a shallow eye sockets, because then you put the paste on in one sort of swoosh.
Yeah.
Whereas if you had deep eye sockets, you'd have to kind of go in there.
Oh, yeah.
Look, I'm not saying it's pleasant. I'm just saying these are the harsh realities of being an invisible man. These things to think about.
So he makes the cat invisible, but then the cat's owner becomes suspicious. She's like, you've done something to my cat. And she reports him to the landlord saying, I think this guy killed my cat. And he's like, I swear I didn't kill your cat. He's just invisible. And then the landlord's like, you've been doing weird experiments in there killing cats. I'm going to evict you. And then he lashes out and like beats the landlord. And then he's like, oh my God, I'm going to get arrested. The heat's on. I need to disappear somehow. What can I do? I'll quickly make myself invisible. And then I'll burn down the apartment. To cover my tracks.
Yeah, that's a good idea. The police just turn up, the whole place is burned down. Well, nothing to see here, I guess.
False alarm, boys!
Just a run-of-the-mill, burnt-out shell.
Yeah, this is fine.
I can't get over these cat eyes. Like, can you just see the front of them, or you see the whole ball and then the tube thing at the back? Floating through the air?
How I've much seen you the see? Ball. Yeah, I'm seeing just the two balls floating around. Like a video game hasn't loaded properly. You know, just like these balls, these eyeballs floating around. Would you see the blink? Probably not.
Oh, yeah.
Or when the cat blinks, so the eyelids make it disappear.
Whoa.
Oh, no, but no, that you. Oh, my God. You're blowing my mind here. So he makes himself invisible. At first he thinks it's great. Think of all the fun and mischief I can get up to. But, he goes up to people, for example, in the street and knocks someone's hat off. Just a bit of fun.
I feel like after you've burned down an apartment, knocking a guy's hat off is going to step back,
you're like,
isn't it?
Yeah, I've got to set that hat on fire or something. But guys, being invisible has its drawbacks too. First of all, he complains that his feet are invisible, so it's hard to walk downstairs. You know, watch where you're going.
Do you need to look at your feet when you go downstairs?
I think if they weren't there, it would be a bit of a strange feeling. Ooh.
But you're not looking a lot of the time, are you?
Yeah.
Yeah, feel it, wouldn't you?
You'd just feel it, yeah. Feel it. I think you feel it. I mean, this is not helping us, just trying to put it back on.
We're all just acting out a walk here.
It's only if it's like slippery that I'm looking at my feet going down steps. Usually I back myself.
Yeah, you're like, I can feel this. I'll feel this.
Yeah.
I'm good at it until I'm thinking about it. It's happened to me a few times where I've been going downstairs and I'm like, wait. Oh no, now I'm in my head about this.
Yeah.
So maybe that's what's happened to him.
He's
too aware of himself.
Yeah.
Now, you know that's going to happen later today.
Oh no, there are some stairs down there. Oh no. Dogs also notice his smell, so he has to avoid dogs because they just start sniffing the air and he's like, oh. He can't wear clothes if he wants to stay unseen, and in England, that means being very cold all the time. And he gets the sniffles.
Oh, that's why his nose becomes visible, is it? No.
Okay. No. No, but he does sneeze a lot, and that's bad because people hear a sneeze from... Where did that come from?
Yeah, we don't like to hear a sneeze in the England. We're very angry.
Yeah, you hate a sneeze.
Wouldn't you just assume it's a ghost in England?
Yeah, we just assume it's a ghost and move on with our day.
Yeah.
Oh, it's just a ghost. Don't bother.
It's a very haunted country, England, don't you think?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. Loads of people have died here.
Yeah. Jack the Ripper died here.
Yeah.
The people he killed died here.
You could go on.
Yeah.
He also can't wear shoes and has to make sure not to cut his feet on surfaces. And his footsteps can be seen as can snow when it builds up on his body. So he's got to think about it more than he thought he had to. Also, navigating crowds in London is difficult. So it's a bit of a nightmare. But he did come up with an ingenious way to cover his face. He broke into a theatrical supply shop in London and stole a fake nose. So that's what the plastic nose is from the start.
That is ingenious.
It didn't go quite to plan though, because the owner of the costume shop almost caught him and pulled out a gun when he kept hearing noises in his store.
They've got a gun problem here, yeah. I tell ya.
Everyone's got guns back in the day.
Yeah, but Griffin knocked him out and tied him up, so problem solved.
Griffin's, like, knuckles at this point must be red.
Yes,
raw.
He's punched so many people.
He's always punching. He's not got gloves on because they'd be visible. This is bare knuckle. How is there not just blood? How are his bloody knuckles not visible?
Just floating bloody knuckles.
Yeah.
That's terrifying. He then went to Iping, where our story started, and hoped to work quietly in his room to try and find a cure that would reverse his invisibility. But before he could find a cure, the stupid townsfolk interrupted him. Now, with Dr. Kemp's help, remember he's talking to Dr. Kemp in his house, he plans to get revenge and go on a reign of terror. And Kemp's like, sorry, what? I'm helping you do what?
Also, revenge on who? He's done all the bad stuff, hasn't he?
Yeah, but he's like anyone who's wronged him.
Right,
like,
okay.
Like Marvel didn't help him and Mrs.
That's harsh. Marvel really tried his best.
Yeah, he tried his best. Yeah, he's like, I'm gonna go on revenge against the world. So they're in Dr. Kemp's study, where, remember, Griffin, the Invisible Man, has been telling the story and revealing his extremely dark side. And Griffin thinks he can hear someone approaching, but Dr. Kemp's like, I can't hear anything. Sit down and don't look out the window. Step over here. Griffin realises that Dr. Kemp has also betrayed him. And he's furious and also sad.
Oh. As he's putting his name on the list.
Yeah.
Oh,
no.
You can see the tears.
And there's only one thing to do. He starts to strip. Dr. Kemp tries to capture him before he becomes fully invisible. And even when aided by three men, including Colonel Adai, the police captain who got Kemp's letter, they fail and Griffin escapes. He gets fully nude and wanders away.
Getting naked, is stripping is such like a funny like ritual that a supervillain has to do. Like, oh, you're going to regret this. No, don't. Zip. Just calmly taking off his belt. Oh, no.
Oh, not the socks. So he runs away. Dr. Kemp tells the police Griffin is insane and plans on going on a violent spree. We've got to track him down. We can probably use some dogs, he says. But they're too late, at least for one man called Wick Steed, who's soon found murdered by the Invisible Man. There aren't any witnesses, so we're not 100% sure what happened, but they do know that it was Griffin. So he's killed someone now. And he confirms his bloodlust when he sends a letter the next day, which is kind of his manifesto. It reads, the game is only beginning. There is nothing for it but to start the terror. This announces the first day of the terror. This is day one of year one of the new epoch, the epoch of the Invisible Man. I am Invisible Man the first. To begin with, the rule will be easy. The first day, there will be one execution for the sake of example, a man named Dr. Kemp.
Oh, no.
He's like, Kemp, you betrayed me. I'm going to kill you. So he marks Dr. Kemp as his first victim after Kemp betrays him. He also sends the letter without a stamp, so Kemp has to receive his own death threat, which is brutal.
Is that really?
With no stamp, you'd have to pay like 2p or something to get it delivered. He's like, oh, no worries, the mail for me. Fantastic. He opens it up and it's like, oh, no. It's the new epoch. This is awful. So Kemp locks himself in his house with a revolver and tells the police that he's going to use himself as bait. But Griffin, the Invisible Man, finds out and just starts smashing all the windows of the house. Adai, the police officer, pulls a gun and goes after Griffin, but again, this is not the best idea, and of course Griffin easily grabs the gun and shoots Adai.
Adai.
Yeah, who's the police officer, the captain. He's like, yeah. I'll sort him out. I'm a cop, I've got my gun. And of course, as soon as he pulls it out, the Invisible Man just grabs it and shoots him.
I thought cops don't have guns here.
Not anymore, not after this debacle.
Just in case there's invisible men.
Very, very embarrassing year for the Met.
It is embarrassing because Dr. Kemp sees, he looks out the window and sees this and runs away from his house, pursued by the invisible man, or he assumes he's pursued by the invisible man. Kemp tries to get help from his neighbour, but they lock the door and refuse to let him in.
So wait. So who's locked where?
Dr. Kemp's like, all right, now Griffin, the invisible man's got a gun, I should run away.
Okay.
So he sprints to his neighbor's house and he's like, let me in. But they're just like, no, lock the door.
Right.
He's like banging on the door. There's an invisible man out here. So he just keeps running because that's all he can do. And he sees some road workers up ahead and he yells to them, I'm being chased by an invisible man.
And they're like, oh, you darling. And then give him a little whistle. Yeah. Get you.
You're all right, gorgeous.
Griffin, the invisible man, grabs Dr. Kemp, but one of the road workers wildly swings his shovel and it hits Griffin.
Oh, sucky.
And Dr. Kemp knows this because Griffin had his hand around Kemp's throat, but it suddenly loosens and falls away because he's been hit with a shovel. Then a crowd descends. The town show
yes,
up.
Yes, here they are. The cavalry's arrived.
Yeah, the mob here. And they start just kicking the shit out of where they think the invisible man is on the ground. Just doing a lot of air stomping.
I love mob justice.
Yeah.
Bring it back.
Bring it back. And he's down and out. Dr. Kemp says, stop, stop, you're going to kill him. But it's too late because he checks the invisible man's body and he's not breathing. He's now dead, and with the crowd still watching on, the body starts to slowly become visible again.
Oh.
The effects wear off, and yes, he is still naked at this point. So there's a crowd just standing by, a naked man is slowly appearing.
Oh, and the cold as well.
Yeah.
Nightmare scenario.
Yeah. Oh,
oh
gosh.
Man, his dick's so small. What a way to go.
Eventually, someone pulls out a sheet and they cover the body.
Oh, cover the dick.
Yeah.
A small sheet.
Yeah. It's a face washer, yeah. We then cut to an epilogue that was added to the novel version. It's not in the original magazine version, so if you want to stay true to the magazine version, stop the podcast now, but this is the novel epilogue.
Hard to do in the room, but
yeah.
Block your ears.
Yeah, block your ears out there. In the epilogue, Mr. Marvel, the tramp from earlier on, has opened a bar/inn called The Invisible Man.
Oh.
He's really cashed in on the story. He got to keep some of the money that the Invisible Man stole because they couldn't prove that it was stolen, so he used that to start a bar. And he also makes a guinea a night for telling and performing his story of the Invisible Man. So he puts on a one-man show each night.
That's great. He's got his own little fringe venue.
Yeah, a little fringe venue, yeah.
Yeah.
Puts himself on.
Is that pub still around?
The Invisible Man.
Yeah.
You can't see it. Yeah, it's out there. People like Dr. Kemp have come looking for the books that contain the Invisible Man's notes and the serum for how to be invisible. But Mr. Kemp tells him, I don't know where they are. They got lost. But that's a lie. He has them. And every Sunday morning, he has a ritual where he closes the blinds, brings out the books and just looks at them, thinking about what he'd do if he was invisible. But he's not a science man at all, so there's no way he's ever going to work it out.
Well, so that's all he does. He goes in there. He doesn't even become invisible. He goes in there, closes the blinds, and goes, hey.
Yeah.
And people knew what I was doing in here, and he just calmly reads.
Yeah.
And if people knew the things I was imagining right now.
Well, the final line is, quoting from Mr. Marvel, once I get the whole of them, Lord, I wouldn't do what he did. I'd just, well... And then he pulls out his pipe.
Oh, God.
When you say he pulls out his pipe.
Yeah.
Yeah. Starts puffing. So to speak. The final line of The Invisible Man is, so he lapses into a dream, the undying, wonderful dream of his life. And though Kemp has fished unceasingly, no human being save the landlord knows those books are there with the subtle secret of invisibility and a dozen other strange secrets written therein. And none other will know of them until he dies. The end. Yeah. The Invisible Man. There it is. H.G. Wells.
Really good stuff.
Do you like that?
Yeah, really good.
For me, HG stands for How Good Wells. How good? How good is that? What do you think of that? Now we've wrapped up the story. Was it what you were expecting, Phil, from the movie sort of stuff you know about it?
I was expecting an invisible man, and boy, did the book deliver.
Oh, yeah, we came through.
Yeah, a lot more guns than I thought there'd be. Very happy to see a mob, as always.
A few mobs in there, yeah.
I mean, it's essentially Frankenstein, isn't it? Frankenstein is about the creator of a monster who has to destroy his own monster, but I guess he's the Dr. Francis Frankenstein and the monster. Mm. He creates himself and then seeks to destroy the monster he's created. But in doing so, he's killed by the mob, which they do in Frankenstein as well. That's my literate
that's good
interpretation.
Stuff.
Thank you very
that's
much.
That's good stuff. Come on, that's good stuff.
I just couldn't think of a gag, so I thought I'd...
Well, Matt, how about you? Does it remind you of any books that you've been reading?
Yes, it does. It reminds me of trying to think of a book. thinking of, Where's Wally?
Yeah, oh, yeah.
He has to... You can't see him. Where is he?
Yes.
It's just like that.
There's a mob. There's always a mob.
There's always a mob.
Yeah. There's always too many people, yeah.
I'd love to just one Where's Wally where the mob's just beating Wally to death. And he's like on the ground like oh, there he is. And his blood is like red and white.
Well, the only thing left to do is you always give it a score out of 5, as you've heard it here today. So, Phil, what would you give The Invisible Man... out of 5.
Well, with these classic books, I always find you have to judge them on two sort of scales. One is like the quality and enjoyment of actually reading it, which tends to be quite low, to be honest.
I've cut that bit out for you, absolutely.
But then you have to think about the legacy. It's such an important book, you know, and it's created so much stuff since that's part of our cultural life. So I'm going to give it a 4.
4 out of 5, fantastic.
4 out of 5, yeah. I also like how action-packed it is. I like how he punches. I find this very funny that he just punches everybody.
Yes, just punching people.
I don't know why that's so funny. It's just funny that he's punching everyone.
And just the visual of someone being punched with a hand you can't see. So just someone going, oh, oh, oh. And then, like, funny. You know, obviously in the movies they just fake it. That's funny.
It's just classic slapstick.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I really like it for that. I like the simplicity of how he's just a murderous asshole. That's the problem with my modern stories, especially with all these origin movies, like Cruella de Vil, origin movies. We don't want to know why these people are dickheads. Show me the dickhead.
Yeah.
Just make them be dickheads. It's enough. I don't need to know why the dickheads. And this is H.G. Wells has nailed that. He's just a dickhead.
Through and through.
Thank you.
Phil Wang, thank you so much. And Matt, how are you feeling?
Yeah, no, I think everything Phil said there was spot on. guy's a dickhead, I like that. I don't know, it doesn't feel like a horror to me. Like, I can't see how that would be turned into a scary movie.
Yeah, I guess if you're getting hit in the face, it's kind of horrible.
Because it just feels like things floating is funny.
It's funny. This is my problem with Invisible Man as a horror story. It's mainly funny to me.
Yeah, like a man wraps. Like in all the movies, it's like the way it's depicted is just a man covered in bandages with sunglasses on. It's funny.
That's funny. Yeah. And a 3.5 stars.
Yeah, okay.
For the comedy. Which I find gun violence to be very funny. Yeah.
So 4 from Phil, 3.5 from Matt. I'm going to give it a 4 as well. Now, we always give the... I did enjoy reading it. We always get the audience at the live shows to give it a score out of 5, and you get to vote with applause. So speak now or forever hold your score. Give me a round of applause if you think that was a 1. One clap, fantastic. Hard not to take it personally. Okay, that's one. Round of applause for 2.
Okay.
We're going to be here a long time, aren't we?
Hey, Dave, you said you took that personally. You've just summarised a book.
Yeah. Yeah. I try to make it entertaining, and I got a 1. It's all good. Two, we've got like 2 people clapping. 3 out of 5. Okay, polite, very polite. 4 out of 5. All right.
That's pretty good.
Anyone give it 4 marks, 5 out of 5. A few people really, really enjoyed that. Okay, well, I think that's a 4 from the audience. I'll mark that down in my spreadsheet, which doesn't exist. Okay. Oh, but that does bring us to the end of the podcast. Thank you so much, Phil and Matt, for joining me on Book Cheat.
Thank you for having me. It's such a blast.
Fantastic. And for the people in the room or for people at home, Phil, where can people find you? Have you got anything coming up that you'd like to tell people at home about?
Oh, yes. Well, I'm on tour in the UK in the spring of 2023, UK and Ireland. Ireland for the first time. Yeah.
Oh, so excellent.
Yeah, it'll be real fun. Yeah.
Oh, fantastic. One more time for Phil Wang.
Hey, thanks.
And Matt, where can people find you?
Jeez, it's a big drop-off, isn't it? But you can find me on my podcast, Who Knew It with Matt Stewart. Dave's been a guest on it a few times recently. And I'm going to be at the Adelaide Fringe Festival and Melbourne Comedy Festival doing my new show, Ding.
Yeah. Great. I'm going to be there too. My show is called Even Hotter in Real Life, so come on down. The live crowd can attest to that, absolutely. Thank you so much. One more time for Matt Stewart. We want to thank the venue, 229, for having us here. Alessandro and Sandor does the best job. Thank you so much. Big round of applause. At the end of the show, I always yell, books forever. So please feel free to join in with me now on the count of three. Thanks so much. And until next week, I'll say one, two, three, books forever. Awesome. Thanks so much. Bye-bye.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.